Hello, hello, beloved listeners. This is Ken Lesser, your host for Advanced Living. Happy Saturday afternoon to you all, or early evening, depending upon when you're listening. Get ready for a fun adventure. As you know, we have a theme here to bring value to your lives and a prayer that I pray daily. Lord, show me the best ways to have the most fun lifting the largest number of people out of the most stress in the shortest amount of time with the least intrusion into their lives so that we can build a global loving community. Well, with that in mind, I am so thrilled to bring to you a guest that many of you have probably never heard of, but are going to be thrilled when you get to find out about Ms. Sherry Lee Devereaux. Now, she is an author of a book that you're going to want to be getting called Shadows on My Shift, which is real-life stories of a psychic EMT, like emergency medical tech. And so she has picked up this moniker or this handle as the psychic EMT, and she does volunteer work with the Phoenix Fire Department Crisis Response Team. And they go out on all kinds of different adverse circumstances, the gunshots, the stabbing, domestic violence, drownings, death notifications, and some of what is just in there, the simple calls that say, I can't cope with life, and help me. And so she ended up with her experience. Well, as she had said, that emergency medical workers, they do expect to see dead people in their line of work. But what makes her different is her ability to communicate with those that are just starting their journey to the other side. If you've heard of Jonathan Edwards and his work on TV with communicating, then you've had a little bit of a glimpse of the type of work that Sherry does. And, of course, the messages that she receives and how she is able to safely convey those to the grieving loved ones that are involved without causing more trauma puts her in a very, very unique position. So, beloved listeners, get ready to hear firsthand about something that is just going to make your day brighter and happier and open some wonderful thoughts for you. Sherry, are you there?
I am, Karen.
Oh, so glad that you can come in and help. But now, of course, with the handle that says that you're a psychic EMT, what I'm curious about is, you know, have you always been intuitive or psychic, or was this recent, or tell us how that got going?
Well, I come from a long line of what seems to be intuitive females. My mother had it. My mother would tell me stories about her mother having, you know, this awareness of being able to know when their children are in trouble.
Mm.
When I was young, I had imaginary friends. I always assumed that everybody had conversations with their pets, because I did. I had, well, a lot of fun conversations with my pets. And it wasn't until I was probably 8 or 9 that I found out I was very different from the rest of my friends. They didn't have all of that extra that I had.
Ah, and when you're saying conversations, I mean, some people talk, but two pets, but don't get a response. Were you able to actually have responses from them?
It's like they would send pictures to me, and I would send pictures back to them.
Ah.
And that's how I would communicate with them, and I just thought everybody could do that. All the hurt animals in the neighborhood showed up on my doorstep, much to my mother's dismay.
Oh, no. Oh, my. So you started your healing work in the veterinary field, so to speak.
I guess, and the funny thing is, to this day, I can go to fires, I can do death notifications, I can do all of those things. I just can't deal with an injured pet.
Oh.
It's silly. I just can't deal with an injured pet. If my pet gets injured, I'm hysterical.
Okay. Oh, my. Well, we all have areas of expertise and areas to you know, turn to others for help. That's what makes us need each other. So, and you fill some needs for people that are just astounding. Now, how did you get started in all this?
Well, you know how they say one thing leads to another.
Yes.
I'm not sure exactly what all started it out. I did want to be an EMT when I was younger, but back then in the late 70s, they didn't allow women on the fire department where I grew up. And I wanted to be an EMT or a paramedic. And I had to kind of put that on the back burner for a while. And motherhood came, and, you know, marriage and raising a family. And when my kids got older, I decided to go into massage therapy. Mm. And, you know, that really kind of filled that need of wanting to assist and help other people. And massage therapy kind of led into another thing, and that led into another thing. And eventually I became an EMT with volunteering with the Phoenix Fire Department on their crisis response teams.
Ah, wow. Wow, so that's a feather in your cap. I don't know if that helped open the door for other women or to be involved, because I know there's a growing number of women that are taking part in that service arena.
There's more and more women in the emergency medicine. When I started out with massage therapy, and that was because of a car accident. Somebody ran into the back of my car, and I was going to a chiropractor, and he said, you know, it would really be great if you could go to a massage therapist. And I said, yeah, that would be great, but I live in a very small town at that time in Wisconsin, and we didn't have those kinds of creature comforts for like 50 miles around. So he said, well, why don't you go to school to become a massage therapist? You seem to have a really healing ability, and then you can come and work for me. And so that's what started that. Becoming more intuitive and more aware came with the massage training. You're touching somebody or in somebody's energy field for an hour. And if you're an intuitive, you start picking up things. And luckily for me, my massage instructors kind of knew what was happening. And they took me aside and said, you're just very intuitive and very gifted, and here's how to handle it. Here's how to ground yourself. Here's how to, you know, save your energy. And I learned a lot from them, and I kind of got interested in the energy work, and I got an invitation to go to China to train at the Olympic Training Center in Beijing in this ancient massage therapy called Tuina, which is sports massage. And while I was there, we were there for 6 weeks. There was many of us there. And what happened was, while there, I was asked if I wanted to stay a little bit longer and train with Master Wong. Now, I assumed that it was going to be for that 6 week, and we would be meeting up, or I would be meeting up with the other 19 people for my return flight home. Never assume anything, especially in foreign countries.
Uh-huh.
I ended up staying 3.5 more months instead of 1 more week.
3.5 more months?
I did. I ended up training with Master Wang Zhuemin in Qigong. And he was the gentleman that came that 5th week and said, I see something in you and I would like to train you. I assumed it was for that 1 week.
Yeah.
And it wasn't. It was much longer.
Oh,
so I stayed, and then that
13.
Led into doing sports massage. Mm-hmm. I worked on a lot of professional sports teams for 9 years because I was able to heal an injury in about half the time using this qigong. And that kind of got me into emergency medical work and volunteering and assisting others, and that got me into writing the book, Shadows on My Shift.
Wow. Now, some people have, perhaps out there, have seen some of those Karate Kid movies. And the reason I'm bringing that up is that in one of the movies, he's injured and hurts, I believe it's a knee, quite badly. And then his mentor, he calls upon him, and he rubs his hand together and does some energy work, and he's able to continue with the match.
Right. In China, they call it qigong, and in Japan, they call it reiki.
Oh.
It's said that qigong is a little stronger than Reiki, and that may be why the healing form of Qigong isn't taught like the healing form of Reiki is taught.
Oh.
It was very, very harsh on me. I sat in meditation 18 hours a day, learning to build my qi and learning how to contain it. I have a lot of electrical issues. I blow up computers. You know, people tell me, oh, I have street lights go out on me all the time when I go underneath them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but do they explode glass all over your car? Because I've had that happen.
So there's an intensity about you.
Well, and the humor in all of this electrical problems is my husband's a nuclear engineer. So he creates energy, and I seem to somehow blow it up. So it's a nice workable combination for both of us.
There you go. Oh, wow. Well, that's amazing. So you had this 13-week or a little over 3-month period training to refine your energies, and then what did that lead to? You said that you did the sports work with the professional sports teams?
Correct. I worked on professional sports players. I worked on VIPs, such as our government, foreign dignitaries that would come and visit. I worked on the U.S. Olympic team and other international Olympic teams to assist their athletes in healing their injuries. And now, when people email me and ask to send energy, I am more than happy to send healing qi towards them. I just ask that they do a favor for 3 others.
Ah, okay.
The whole pass it on thing.
Yes, that pay it forward.
Yep.
Okay, well, there's a bargain out there. I don't know if any of my beloved listeners may have an injury or something that requires some attention, but you have an opportunity to email Sherry and receive some of her healing energy as long as you're willing to accept that healing and then go out and bless 3 people's lives with some sort of a grace, a favor, something positive that you can do. And I think there's going to be a number of people that want to respond to that. Would you be kind enough to share your email address?
Well, they can get a hold of me by going to my website, www.intuitiveeyes.com.
So that's intuitiveeyes.com.
Correct.
Those two
and
words.
On there, there's a contact me, and they can email me through there.
Okay. And so from this, that alone, Sherry, a person could have continued doing that. The needs for those things are tremendous, and especially dignitaries, different people in government, to help them to feel better and to think more clearly, that's a grace that we all need. So something must have come up that kind of changed your direction.
It did. What happened was, I got involved in how much money I was making doing all of this instead of how I was assisting other people. And when you step off your path, sometimes they treat you a little harshly out there. And I had my shoulder torn out.
Oh.
And it took 2 surgeries, and they said, that's it. You're retired. You're sidelined. You're out of work.
Uh-huh.
And it took a while, because every time somebody would say, well, now what do you want to be? I would say, I want to be a massage therapist. I want to go back to doing what I was doing. I liked my job. Think about it. You're working on some of the top athletic bodies in the world.
Yeah.
Who wouldn't like the job?
Right.
And the money was really nice. And it wasn't until I decided that I needed to step back on that path of service that everything turned back around again. And that's when I started going into the field of EMT, or emergency medical technician, because they don't make a lot of money. They're very low pay. But the satisfaction of helping other people was really, I think, what I liked the best. And so I tried to get back into that field, and luckily for me, my shoulder was able to do that kind of work. And so I just kind of naturally fell into that. And I found the city of Phoenix has a volunteer service called the Crisis Response Team that was started about 12 years ago.
Mm.
And we're all volunteers. We get grants, and through those grants, we will get our meals reimbursed occasionally. And we get 50 cents an hour for our clothing allowance.
Mm.
But they provide a service for most of the volunteers. As you know, everything's a give-and-take kind of situation. A lot of people give up their time volunteering for the Crisis Response Team, but the Crisis Response Team helps EMTs get onto the Phoenix Fire Department, and they will help students who are going after their master's in counseling or social services become a behavior health specialist volunteer, and they take care of the emotional and mental needs of our customers. And they get their one-on-one contact hours for school.
And this is, of course, under emergency high-stress situations.
Very high stress. Somebody's loved one has just died, and we're there usually the second on scene. You know, the closest fire department would answer. In Phoenix, we have, I think, 58 fire stations.
Ah.
So one of those fire stations, within a five-minute call time radius, would answer that call, and there are only three of us, three units for the crisis response teams up at any given time, and we have much further to travel, so it takes us a little bit longer to get there.
Yeah, but wow. Well, and I'm curious because this ability that you've developed, or when did you realize that you could talk to the dead?
You should have seen my face the first time.
Oh.
I mean, I had always, you know, I had gotten messages once in a while, but they would be kind of brief and kind of far between, and I certainly never encouraged them. It wasn't until one of the first calls we went on, we had to deliver a death notification, and I kept hearing like a radio on in the background, but it seemed to be just one person talking, and I thought maybe they're listening to talk radio in one of the rooms, not paying a lot of attention to it, but I kept getting this very cool breeze feeling on me, and I kept feeling very kind of sick to my stomach almost.
Mm.
And I stepped outside to splash water on my face, and I realized that I could still hear the voices a little bit. Now, I realized this is not still the radio, and we have a term for the people who are emotionally unstable, and the police term or the fire term is 918, and I kind of thought I was 918. I thought I'd lost it. I'm hearing voices. I'm knowing this is not right. I walked back into the house, and it got much louder, and I realized that I could communicate with this man. I saw his picture hanging on the wall with his family, and as soon as I looked at him and had a face, he came through really clear. Back out to the van, more ice water on my face, saying, "This is not happening."
Oh, no.
And I went back in, and I was able to get messages from him. And you can't be in a position like mine without walking a very fine line. I'm there for emergency medical. I am not there to tell them messages from their dead loved one. This is usually within the first few hours of finding out that their life has just drastically changed due to the loss of a loved one. And I'm sure they don't want me coming in saying, "Oh, by the way, your dead loved one just told me that."
Yeah.
That would add so much more trauma. So I have to come up with stories. And one of my favorite stories is a couple had met in high school, and World War II had separated them. And at their 50th wedding anniversary, they had gotten back together. And when they met at their 50th class reunion, they had gotten back together and found out that both of their spouses had passed on. And they hooked up. The love was still there, and they were very happy. A few years had gone by, and the gentleman's health was failing. And the wife was afraid that his adult children were going to take everything, because that's what they had said. you know, she didn't deserve anything, that they were going to make sure that she didn't get anything. And she was very worried and upset. He made an appointment to go to the lawyer that morning, and later on that day they were going to get together and talk about the will, and he was going to give her a copy. In the meantime, he put it in a safe place. He laid down for his afternoon nap, and he never woke up. She found him passed away in the chair. Well, that's when we get the call, and we come out there to help her. She was very worried, saying that he had went to the lawyer, had paid cash. She didn't know what lawyer he went to or where he had put the new will, and she was very upset. And so while my partner, who was the behavior health specialist, was kind of talking to the lady and trying to calm her down, I took a little walk around through the house, and I walked back by where the gentleman had passed away. And I said, now would be a great time if you have any messages. Please get them through now. And he showed me, walking into the library, he pulled out a solid color book, like a green book. He showed me putting the will in the book and putting it back on the third shelf to the right. And I thought, okay, I just can't walk in there, pull out the green book and say, hey, look what I found. Because that's probably going to freak her out if she thinks about it for any length of time.
Yes.
So I make up stories about my family, and I said, my husband loves books, which he does, but he never puts important papers in them. And I told her, he loves books, and he puts all of his important papers in solid color books. So maybe your husband might do the same thing. Take a look at the red, blue, or green books. Maybe he put it in one of those. And she went in there, and they were looking through all the books, and it took about 15 or 20 minutes, but she found it. And she was so excited. And, you know, that was really good, because she was able to take a step closer to healing her grief at that time. She was able to get rid of some of the stress that she was feeling and deal with what was really important.
Yes, and to fulfill what would have been a wish of her deceased husband, that things happen in it for justice and fairness to all.
Yeah. So I was, you know, I was very happy that I had that ability to be able to do that. I can't say that I've been happy on every call to have that ability, but I do what I can to pass the messages along. I guess my main point is, I really try to stress to people, tell your loved ones that you love them. It's so much better and so much more meaningful coming from the person that is, you know, wanting to say that they love you than having me tell you, oh, by the way, they really loved you. It just doesn't carry the same oomph, the same meaning behind it as hearing that message from your own loved one.
Yes. So there's an important thing that for myself, as I've been doing some huge healing with my brother, that was a request of our mom, who died almost 2 years ago, and to see the change in him as I've been more openly expressing my love for him and this desire to put differences behind us and to really have a beautiful relationship, that was something that our mom both knew that was within us to do. We just had to get some stuff out of the way. And so that advice, that message of forgiveness for anyone we hold any animosity towards, especially our families, and to be able to communicate some of those important things. So, Sherry, that's a huge message.
Well, you know, also with the people that do something special for us. You know, the teacher that taught us how to write, the boyfriend who taught us to grieve a broken relationship, you know, those kinds of things, I think those people should be told thank you. You know, even though what happened wasn't the most pleasant thing, you taught me a wonderful lesson, and thank you. Because, you know, you never know. The day may come when you say, you know, I should have told them that they really did something that meant something in my life. And it's just easier to tell them, because then you both have the satisfaction. And when somebody gives you a compliment, you don't have to return one. You can just smile, or you can smile and say thank you. Giving a compliment makes both people, the one giving it and the one getting it, feel good. So you don't really have to return the compliment. And I think that's why a lot of people are afraid to give a compliment, because they don't want to put the other person in a position to have to give one back.
Mm.
So just learn to say thank you.
Ah, the simple thank you is sufficient.
Even when you pass people in the store or on the sidewalk or in the hallways at work or wherever you are, make eye contact for a split second and smile. Sometimes all that person needs that day is just a smile.
Yes. Yes, where so many people's lives have become so busy and their minds so distracted that it's interesting. They show pictures of people on the streets of different cities or going through stores, and very much nobody's noticing anyone else.
Everybody looks down or they look up. And if you really want to shake people up, when you get into an elevator, turn around and look at them and just smile.
Okay, friends. So, and remember, Halloween's coming up, so you can do this wearing a mask.
Yeah, there you go.
Now, I'm curious, as probably are so many of my listeners, that with the work that you do, are you able to share a few more stories of some of the things that you've done? Because this is just so amazing. We don't see any kind of this. And, I mean, this is the theme for definitely a television series.
Well, they are talking television and movie. So I let those people work out those details. I just continue to do what I do.
Right.
One of the very first time that I had to tell somebody that they were dead was a little strange. There was a car accident, and a young man was killed in the car accident on one of Phoenix's freeways. And it's 2 in the morning, and this happens to be the very first story in my book. And if they go to www.shadowsonmyshift.net, they can read the first story. And that's kind of the one that I'm going to explain. The young gentleman didn't know that he was dead, and he didn't understand why nobody was paying any attention to him, and that I was the only one that was paying any attention to him. And I had to tell him that you were killed in the car accident. And it took him a few minutes to kind of have it sink in. And while he was adjusting, I was trying to adjust. I mean, it's hard enough to tell somebody that their loved one has passed, because you can touch them, you can hug them, you can hand them tissues, you can tell them, you know, I'll be here moment by moment helping you get through this. What do you do with someone that has just passed themselves? That was a tough experience. And he finally ended up telling me that he said, when you tell my mother that I've died, please tell her that I love her and that I had my seatbelt on. And I thought to myself, well, I'm not doing the death notification. There's plenty of police officers on scene, and in that instance, they'll do the death notification.
Mm-hmm.
And it was probably 20 minutes later when one of the newer police officers came up and said, would you guys please help me out? I have to deliver the death notification, and this is my first one. And I thought, now, did he know, because he's crossed over to the other side, that I would be doing this death notification? Because at that point, I hadn't known. And we went and we told his mother that he had died. And I had almost forgot to add the seatbelt when the young man, made his presence known in his mother's house to remind me. And I reminded her that he was wearing his seatbelt. And she broke down and just started crying. And she said that they had a pact together between the two of them, that when the other one would put their seatbelt on, it was a hug from that person. So every time the son would put his seatbelt on, he was to know that his mother was giving him a hug and keeping him safe. And that meant more to her than anything. And so I was glad that, you know, I kind of followed what I was asked to do and deliver that message. And I reminded her that now her son would be her angel, and that he would always give her hugs when she wore her seatbelt. And that really helped her to heal.
Mm.
And I was very glad that I could pass that on. And I have to say, telling souls that they have died in some sort of accident has not gotten any easier. That's still the hardest part for me. When newborns die, I usually don't get a message from the newborn, but they almost always have a family member there that seems to take them. And I've seen that happen 3 times already, where we have been called on the infant death, unknown reasons why they died.
That, like, and the sudden...
the sudden infant death syndrome.
Yeah.
And it's very sad when infants die, but knowing that they're well taken care of by grandparents or great-grandparents or whatever family members have crossed before them, I wish that there was a way that I could reassure family members. So I try to say, oh, you know, I'm sure that your family's there, and I want to so bad say, oh, and the family member named this is there, and the one that looks like this is there, but I can't. I would like to, but I'm not there for that reason. So I wrote a book, and I hope that, you know, some of the people will kind of take heart and tell people in their lives that, you know, hey, you made a difference. Thank you.
Yeah, and that's so important. As our listeners are hearing this, and I'm sure another story or two that you might be willing to share, hopefully some of you out there, I know I've been thinking in my mind of a couple of people that I haven't communicated with in a while, that there was a time of a lot of love for them, and then that ended, and they're still alive. And I thought, you know, that would feel so good as I was listening, just to be thinking of some of those people that are still here, that we haven't been part of their lives. It may have been past spouses, girlfriends, family members, who knows who, but to take time and remember some of the times of great love and appreciation, and just to take that as a gift to ourselves, and perhaps make a tape of something, or write a letter that you may or may not ever send to them. But
you know, they have those little picture frames now. You can put a picture of yourself in there and record your voice telling someone, I love you, thank you, I appreciate you. So even when you're not around anymore, they can still hear that. And I don't think people understand that even when your loved ones cross over, they can still hear you. They still know what's going on. They still know what you're up to, what you're doing, family celebrations. They're there. They're there when your family members gather. So at that point, you just let them know. You don't have to go to, you know, the gravestone or the place that they passed or do any of that. They're there with you, and you can just tell them, I really love you, thank you, I appreciate you. I know some people say, well, my mother said when she passed away, anytime I found a penny tails up, that would be her way of saying I'm thinking of you. And, you know, so you can kind of set those if you want. You know, hey, I know that you've passed away, but if you're thinking of me or you want me to think of you, leave and, you know, name an object. I don't think it would work if you had $100 bills laying around, but pennies are usually pretty good. Feathers,
yeah.
People have used feathers, red balloons, those kinds of things to associate love and remembering.
Yeah, well, you know, when you mentioned those pennies, my mom passed, it'll be 2 years ago, coming November 5th, and a little over a year ago, it was a little past a year after she had died, and my birthday came up, and I decided to do something that I'd been wanting to do but hadn't done, kind of as a tribute to her, to step forth in courage, and I wanted to go skydiving and had never done that. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to go skydiving. And there were a couple of places to go to, and I picked one and drove into the lot, And as I got out and parked my car and opened the door, and I took two steps towards the building and looked down, and there was a penny heads up with the Denver Mint mark where she had passed, and it was the year of her passing. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And then as I went on that journey to skydive the first time, it was amazing because there was a woman, Betty, who had flown from Denver to San Diego, where I was living at the time, and she was 75 years old, and for her 75th birthday, the present was for her to go skydiving. And so Betty was on the airplane that I was on as we took our training and did a jump together. And it was, and when I found out, not only, you know, that she was, you know, older and celebrating her 75th birthday, but that she was from Denver, where my mom was, it was like so beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It was like
synchronicity.
She was there going, here, I can't be with you to celebrate your birthday and this event, but I sent a woman from Denver. So, well, what else? I mean, are there any other stories that you'd be willing to share? I mean, Sherry, this is just so amazing.
There was this story that I talk about in my book on how the tables were turned on me. That doesn't usually happen. And this instance was the only one in many years of me being a volunteer with Phoenix Fire. A father had a 14-year-old boy, and he had other children as well, but he was a cross-country truck driver, and he was out on the road, and while he was out on the road, his son had a brain aneurysm. He was taken to the emergency room, and they operated, and there wasn't anything else that they could do for him. So they sent him home under hospice to go home and, you know, pass away peacefully there amongst his family. And his father was on the road when he passed away. And so twice his father had missed something very important. And we were called out because the young boy had died at home. We were called out to help the family and help them kind of go through their grieving process while we were waiting for the medical examiner and other people to come. And when I walked into the door, usually I'm not the first one in. Usually the behavior health specialist is the first one in because they make initial contact, and I'm just there in case something medical happens. But this time the door was open for me, and I walked in first. And the father just got so excited, and he grabbed my arm, and he said, I knew it, I knew it, I knew it. You're my gift from God. God sent you. You're my angel. Now, you would have to know me. Because my partner, who knew me, took one look at me and tried very hard not to laugh because we were there on a very serious call. And he's just like, oh, no.
Yeah.
And he just kind of turned around and just couldn't make eye contact. And the man kept saying, oh, I know you can give me a message from my son. I missed being able to tell my son so many things, and I know that you can tell him. And I kept reassuring him, sir, we are here to assist you through this grieving process. But your son has passed away. There's no way that I can get a message to him. And he looked me straight in the eyes, and he said, I saw a blue-eyed person walking through that door, and I knew that God was sending me my angel, and you walked through that door. And I looked around in the house, and there was probably 25 people in the house, and I was the only one with blue eyes. And I thought, uh-oh, now what do I do? Because I didn't want to outright lie to him, but I also didn't want to put myself in a position where I could be reprimanded through, you know, the fire department. And he just kept begging me, please, 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 I know it's you, I know it's you. And I finally broke down and said, you're right, I can. Let me see what I can pick up. But I couldn't get anything way out on the other side of the house. And so he took me into the room where his son had died. And I was able to get some messages from his son and pass those messages along and make the father laugh with some of the stories and, you know, make him cry and make him understand that there is no need for forgiveness because he wasn't there. his son understood. And a few months later, I was in a grocery store, and I ran into the father again. And he said, oh, please, do you have any messages from my son? It's just so amazing that I would run into you again. And I said, well, let me see. And because I had made contact with the son initially, it was very easy for me to make contact again. And I said, yes, your son is showing me a picture of a big chocolate birthday cake with lots of gooey chocolate frosting and chocolate syrup over the top and a candle, a brown candle on top. I said, I don't know what that means. And the father started crying right there in the cereal aisle. And he said, today is my son's birthday. And I didn't know what I should do for my son. And I said, well, I think your son is trying to tell you to continue to celebrate his birthday like you always did. Chocolate cake, chocolate frosting, and chocolate syrup. And you know, he said that was his son's favorite. And he would pour chocolate syrup over his chocolate cake with chocolate frosting. So I was able to get that message through. But, you know, that was one of the few times that it was kind of turned on me, where somebody else knew something before me.
Mm. Wow.
But I do try to teach my students. I teach guided meditation classes, and I do try to teach my students how to open up and become more aware to the messages that you get around you all the time that we just don't pay attention to.
Yeah. Now, I'm sure people would be curious. You mentioned earlier that someone can go on to www.intuitiveeyes.com. That's all small letters, no space, intuitiveeyes.com. Get an email address and send in a request for some healing energy. And as long as they're willing to do a favor for three other people, that pay it forward. Do you... because you've done this work so successfully as an EMT, and there are people like Jonathan Edwards out there doing, you know, work helping people. Have you considered making your services available to others, or is that something that's
I can. I do readings. I prefer phone readings.
Yeah.
They can get a hold of me again. There's a page on my website on intuitiveeyes.com. If they want to pre-order the book, they can do that through Intuitive Eyes. I go to the New River Press website that's listed on there, or they can just go to newriverpress.com and they can pre-order the book. I'll be doing a seminar with Paul Eno, who's one of the world's top experts in the field of the supernatural. We'll be doing a cross-country tour together. He has a new book coming out called Turning Home, God, Ghost, and Human Destiny. So we're going to be teaming up, and we're going to be starting Saturday, November 18th in Phoenix and going across country. So if people want to check where I'm going to be next, they can go to my website, and hopefully I'll have it updated every few days.
Oh, okay. Wow. Well, that'll be great, so that people can track your tour with Paul Eno, and you'll be doing talks, each of you giving some special insight into this area.
Yeah, he's been a paranormal investigator for over 35 years.
Mm.
And he's pretty well known, especially in the New England area. So we've decided to team up, and he'll give you the heebie-jeebies with his ghost stories and the hauntings and the pictures that he was able to take. And then I'll give the audience messages as they come through and talk about my book and let the audience learn how to become more aware by doing some exercises while they're there.
So I'm just curious, through the classes, I don't know if you've taught them for a period of time, but what I'm looking for, I guess, would be some encouragement that says, well, yes, I have this special gift, which you do, and that perhaps you've been successful at helping others to begin to open that door. Because I'm understanding it from a number of intuitives that they say that we're really all intuitive when we calm down and listen.
I explain to my students that it's a lot like, let's say I wake up tomorrow morning and for some strange reason I decide I'm going to run a marathon. I'm not going to enroll in a marathon that afternoon and expect to run it. So you can't just wake up and decide that you're going to be a medium or a psychic or an intuitive and expect everything to happen that day. Your first thing in running the marathon is finding a good pair of tennis shoes. So your first thing in being more aware is to find out, do you hear, do you see, do you feel, do you sense, you know, and kind of find out where your gifts lie. I think we're all capable of doing all of it. We just have a preference or maybe a better ability in some areas than others. But I don't think we're totally lacking in any one area. I think with a little practice and, you know, a little determination, I think everybody is able to become very aware of what's going on around them and receive messages from their guides, their angels, their loved ones. It's not as hard as it seems.
And do you find, in general, that when people are getting messages from the other side, that they're of a positive, loving nature?
Always.
I mean, people aren't on the other side going, "Well, you bum, Ed."
No, but you know, if the person who crossed over had a wicked sense of humor,
yeah,
when they were alive, they still have it after they've passed.
Oh.
So that does come through. If they picked on you a lot when they were alive, they're going to pick on you from the other side. But it's never, you know, malicious. It's never hurtful. It's just all done in a very loving way because they come from that place of such deep love.
So if the way they showed love was basically like a giving you noogies or
yeah, then I would see your head in an arm getting a noogie, and I would say, "Oh, by the way, he's giving you a noogie." And
yeah,
then they would start laughing, saying, "He always did that." Well, why would you think he would stop now?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, that's good to know that there's a continuity of the personality.
Right, and I think you hear a lot of the mediums will say that, and it's, you know, they all seem to confirm that whatever personality they had when they were alive, they have after they've crossed. So, you know, if they didn't talk much and they were very shy and bashful around large crowds, they're probably not going to come through one of the seminars. You know, they may come to me later, or they may come to me before the seminar starts, and I may come to you later and say, "Oh, by the way, they didn't want me to mention this in front of everybody, but..."
Uh-huh.
And that happens. And I think the more you tune into things and the more you practice, the better you get. I didn't just start this, you know, a few weeks ago or a few months ago or even a few years ago. I started this as a young child. And there were times in my life where I ran from it. There were times in my life when I hid from it. There were times in my life I totally denied it. And then there was a time that I thought I had run so far away from it that I ran smack back into it.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, enough running. This is what I'm supposed to do, and this is what I'm going to do. So here I am doing what I'm supposed to be doing and hoping they don't thump me anymore.
Ah, you're going, "Oh, I hope I'm on track for sure this time. I don't want to lose a shoulder and get that pulled out again."
Yeah, that was two surgeries, and that was kind of hard.
Yeah.
But, you know, it did get me here today. And I don't think anything that happens is a mistake as long as you learn from it. If there's even just a small gleam of something that you can get out of any experience that you go through and you learn from it, that makes it no longer a bad experience. You've learned something from it, and by learning something, you've grown, and growing is good.
Yes. Yes. And are there, that you know of, people, I was just thinking of the grace, and there's hot spots in the world where there's a lot of tragedy going on and many people crossing over under very violent, adverse conditions. And and it was just kind of like my heart reaching out to for something as a way that, that some of the people left behind could know that the loved ones from the other side are still there loving them. And and I don't know if messages from the other side would be messages of, you know, of more vengeance or messages to find a way to make peace. I'm just kind of pulling this in at the moment. And can you shed any light on that at all?
My experience of dealing with souls that have crossed to the other side is the majority of the time they come from a place of love. There was one time where a young teenager who was a very angry teen accidentally ran his car into a palm tree and was killed. And he was very angry at me for a while. But within an hour or two of being on that call and dealing with him and the family that he had left behind, by the end of that time, he actually came from a place of love. So it definitely turned around. So I think souls at some point will come from love. I don't think they have any choice.
Yeah.
Where they come from is love, and where they're going back to is love. And I think once you find and feel that love again, it's very easy to embrace it and to wonder, why was I such a butthead? That was a lie. So
there's a bumper sticker.
Yeah.
Have I ever heard of one? Well, that's a powerful message of encouragement, because there's all these alerts, the terrorists, look out for this group, look out for that group, and to hear you sharing that message of encouragement and to offer through your book that I know is just going to be huge. Shadows on My Shift, Real Life Stories of a Psychic EMT. And for people to go visit www.intuitiveeyes.com, intuitiveeyes.com. Any kind of wrap-up messages that you'd like to share?
Tell the people that you love them, and tell the people that mean something or have changed your life, even in a small way, tell them. Tell them thank you.
And that thank you, it applies not just to people that have changed your life, sometimes for the better, but sometimes for, you know, something negative that appeared negative at the time, but turned out to be a growth lesson.
I like to say, for those who gave us our most challenging experience.
Ah, there you go. So a thank you to all those that have really impacted our lives strongly.
It's
Well, Sherry, that's really an important message, and folks, I want to encourage you to get that book, go on and pre-order it. It's due out soon. If you have some need for energy healing, Sherry, through that intuitiveeyes.com has offered, send her an email request, and she can help send powerful healing energy to you as a gift, as long as you're willing to gift three other people with some sort of a favor. That's a fabulous, fabulous offer, Sherry.
Thank you. I'm glad I can offer it.
I want to thank you so much and just wish you fabulous success. I know that the listeners that hear this or will tune in, tell others, as this file will be archived, so they can tune into this and go to bbsradio.com and you know, listen to this archive. So, you've just shared so beautifully. I know I'm intrigued to make that list and start getting some communication with the people that are still here. So thank you so much, and bless you on all your work. And my beloved listeners, I want to send a blessing to all of you, that there is a grace and a love greater than anything that we can ever imagine, and that it's there for us, and that somehow as we turn to that, that something good is awaiting us. And so I wish you all a wonderful week and look forward to being with you next Saturday at 4 p.m. Pacific time for another adventure in advanced living land. Sherry, thank you.
Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome. Goodbye to all.
Let go of it, God. Let myself lose and let go of it. Let it go. Let
Thank you.